WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota.
From WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton, this is Johannes Werner with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, July 25th. 200,000 gallons of raw sewage spilled after lightning struck a Bradenton lift station last week. City officials waited to publish the incident in a social media post until almost a week later. The spill comes after a complete water outage this weekend. Lift stations help transfer untreated waste to the city's wastewater plant. On Thursday, a lightning strike directly hit lift station number 24 on State Road 64 East, and the station lost power. As a result, some 200,000 gallons of raw sewage spilled from the lift station and a nearby maintenance hole. On Sunday, a power outage at the city's water treatment plant caused a citywide water outage and led officials to issue a boil water notice. Sarasota County Schools received yet another A from the Florida Department of Education. That's the 21st year in a row for the county's public schools to get the overall top grade. The district ranked 5th behind Lafayette, St. John's, Nassau, and Walton counties. Last year, Sarasota schools were also ranked number 5 in the state. The Department of Education's grading system assesses student performance, growth, and overall school effectiveness. The top grade came despite a tougher rule that raises the grading thresholds. Sarasota County Schools improved a steep 49 points on the overall district accountability system, and Sarasota County's third grade English language arts ranks 2nd among all 67 Florida school districts. Manatee County Schools maintained their overall B rating. The Sarasota-Manatee real estate market is leveling out, per a new report from the Realtor Association of Sarasota and Manatee. The association's June trend report found the markets in both counties are experiencing increases in inventory and declines in sales of existing single-family homes, townhouses, and condos. The data reflects a general slowdown in demand that's taken hold of the market following a post-pandemic boom. The drop-off comes as prices keep soaring in Sarasota-Bradenton, particularly for renters. This has been Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Thursday, July 25th.
Welcome to The Detail. I'm your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. We are in election season for the August primary, which, as many of you know, for over 50 years, the Sarasota County Commission has been a Republican, fully Republican commission. And the Republican Party has a big advantage in voter registration. So in a way, the August election for the past 50 years, the August primary, has chosen who will become our Sarasota County Commissioner. We are seeing more people run from the Democratic Party, which is great. We are seeing NPAs run, which is great. But August 20th, is an important day. And with me in the studio is somebody who is running for the Republican nomination for District 1 County Commissioner, Alex Coe. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me today, Kathy.
Yeah, and I just wanted to put that preface out there. It's interesting because WWSB just reported that 4,000 people, there have been 7,000 people who've changed their party affiliation in Sarasota County prior to this primary. Wow. 4,000 of them changed to the Republican Party. And some of that could be people who understand, like, if I want to have a voice in my county government, the August election is actually the place to weigh in. You are running against Teresa Mast. And so everybody knows I did extend an invitation to Teresa Mass to join us or to have an hour for herself. Have not heard back. But I'm so happy that you're here, and we're going to talk about why you're running and then why you, right? How are you different from your competition? So Alex, I know your story, but a lot of people don't. So why don't you just start off by giving us some background? Where are you from? Where'd you go to school? What have you been doing? How'd you get interested in county government?
Well, Kathy, thank you for having me on the show today. I love any opportunity that I have to get in front of the people and give them an opportunity to get to know me better. Mm. Well, I have been in Sarasota for almost 30 years. I graduated from college here. I went to New College. Mm-hmm. I started businesses here, raised my children here. You know, this is my town. I love this place. And as an anthropologist, one of the key areas that I work in is agriculture and food systems. Mm. And I decided to study cattle ranching because I wanted to understand better how cattle ranching worked in Florida. You know, most people are surprised to learn that Florida is the third largest, or somewhere around there, I don't know the data today, but approximately mm-hmm. the third largest cattle producing state in the nation.
That's huge.
It's huge.
Most people don't know that.
Yeah, most people don't know that. And the cattle ranching in Florida is very unique. It's a cow-calf industry. So because of the weather and the year-long growing season, the ranchers in Florida predominantly are producing the steers that will later become your cowboy steak or your hamburger. Mm. So the importance of keeping systems in place and how that affects our food supply is an area that I study. So mm. I wanted to look at cattle ranching and have an understanding of that. And so I worked cattle with a number of the families here, the Longinos, the Carltons, Underhills, the Murphys. Mm-hmm. And what I learned were about the pressures of development on cattle ranching. And that was really a key introduction to what we're doing and how we're managing our land and what our priorities are. And so in order to understand that a little bit more, I started to look more closely at what were the decision-making processes in our county? How were we making decisions about preserving agriculture, preserving environmental resources, mm-hmm. and future growth? And that's kind of the question that started me on this path of seeking to understand what does good governance look like?
Yeah.
If this was a thesis, that would be the title.
Yeah. So I first met you, God, it's been at least 10 years ago. You were on the board of Control Growth Now. Mm. Like you had, was it this cattle ranching experience in your studies that led you to participate in that organization?
Yeah, it was actually. And I was more or less the East County mm-hmm. ag expert. Like that was part of what I brought to the board. And I reached out to the board because I had looked and researched the organization and saw that they had a long history and understanding the dynamics of growth. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I interviewed Dan Lobeck. I talked to a number of other people that were on the board. And that's how I got involved with that organization, really out of wanting to understand further what the essential pressures were going to be on the future of food in Sarasota County. Mm. You know, because I think most people agree that a people who can't feed themselves, you know, you're not truly free. And particularly when we think about resilience for hurricanes, mm-hmm. the importance of having a local food supply, a dynamic within our own county mm-hmm. where, you know, we have access to food regionally is critical, but I have come to understand that that is so far from being a priority on the minds of the elected officials that we have in Sarasota County today.
Yeah. So tell me about, because this isn't your first run for county commission. You ran in 2018, Is that right?
I ran in 2018, yeah. Opposing Christian Ziegler.
Yes. And then, but you've also run for office and served on the Charter Review Board. So tell me about that experience.
Yeah, in 2020, the people of Sarasota County elected me to the Charter Review Board. And so, being, you know, a researcher at heart, the very first thing I did was request historic copies of the Charter every 10 years from the time it was first written. And then I requested specific versions of it when there had been some major change or modification.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I did is, because most people don't even know about the Charter.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's explain. The Charter is the local constitution for Sarasota County. Not every county in Florida has a county charter. You don't have to have one in Florida. And if you don't, then the state constitution tells the counties how they have to organize as a county with their commissioners and all. But Sarasota County took the step of creating a county charter. It is our home rule document. And the Charter Review Board, there's three ways that the charter can be amended. The Charter Review Board can create an amendment and put it on the ballot. The county commission can create an amendment and put it on the ballot, or citizens can gather signatures and then through that process put an amendment on the county charter. So I became acquainted with the importance of the Charter Review Board, gosh, back it was in like 2008, 2009, when I was looking at this stadium issue and spring training, and we saw that the Sarasota County Charter had an amendment that required beyond a certain amount of borrowing. There's a bonding limit. I believe it was, it's tied to the Consumer Price Index. Originally, the limit was $17,000. Beyond that, you had to get voter approval. So, for instance, Legacy Trail, when they wanted to extend Legacy Trail, we all voted on an amendment. We all voted to approve a bond because it was going to be more than, I think the limit now is like $22 million, something like that. But we were like, oh, this is a very reasonable rule. And it applied, actually. We insisted. They were going to try to use the city of Sarasota because there is no bonding limit like that, or it's not as buttoned up. And they were going to have the city bond for the stadium. We're like, no, you can't do that. And you need to ask the voters. So that's just one really important example of how that charter has kept, you know, fiscal responsibility in the county. And there have been some really fabulous advocates over the years, like Kathy Bolam is somebody. But tell me what that was like. And the rest of us, I think the audience would be curious to know, what did you learn serving on the Charter Review Board? And why were you interested in serving on the Charter Review Board?
Well, you know, Sarasota County has a very unique situation because, like you said, not all counties are chartered. Out of the 67 counties we have in Florida, only 20 of them are chartered. And right now, only Sarasota County has an elected Charter Review Board.
Mm.
So the most important thing about the charter is this concept of home rule. There are candidates out there that, you know, say the charter is our constitution, and just like a constitution, it should never be changed.
Mm, never?
And, you know, that's not right. The charter is a tool for the people. It's a tool for the people to control and define the type of governance that they want.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's a big power.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an effort in 2022 during the time that I served on the board. There was a single member districts initiative. There was an attempt to overturn the vote of the people, which
first of all,
I don't understand. The government should have no ability to do that. Overturn the vote of the people A special election was held early in 2022 to try to overturn the single-member district vote at the expense of our tax dollars.
Was that in 2020, I think?
2022.
Yeah. That's right. Okay.
2022. Mm-hmm. Luckily, the people showed up.
Yeah.
And it was voted again to continue single-member districts.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the May meeting of the Charter Review Board, at the very end of the meeting, a document was given to all of the Charter Review Board members at that time saying that the chair and the former chair of the Charter Review Board were bringing two amendments forward to the county commission. And on that paper, it said the June date that they were bringing it forward. And then it said the July public hearing date.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, you know, not to get into the full story, but this has been something that I've been involved in, also with the Republican Liberty Caucus that I'm a chair of in Sarasota County. We have been working to, first we worked to try to stop it from getting on the ballot.
So I need to back up a minute. Who were the chair and the former vice chair? Were they they weren't current Charter Review Board members?
Yeah, they were current Charter Review Board members.
Who were they?
It was David Samuels and Joe Justice.
Okay.
So, and Joe is still on the board, and David Samuels, he resigned, and I think he moved back to Ohio.
But see, okay, but there's a process that the Charter Review Board has to go through to bring something, right?
Well, yes.
And they were bypassing that,
yeah, this is exactly what we at the Republican Liberty Caucus and also other people in the community, we did a workshop last summer to teach people about the charter, and the people in the workshop identified the 7.1A amendment that was passed, and we taught people the process to repeal that. But go back to this, when this happened. And you're exactly right, because it was the previous Charter Review Board that created those two amendments. And this was during COVID, and it was actually October of 2020. A number of people, I was there as well, went to this meeting, and they passed these two amendments.
And what were the amendments?
It was the amendment that did pass that says any amendment to the charter cannot conflict with the Florida Constitution, general law, or the charter. So basically it says an amendment to the charter cannot conflict with the charter.
So you can't amend the charter. And I'm remembering this. Yeah, it was crazy.
It's crazy language. Yeah. It's part of it is just to limit people's access to the charter. Because, to be perfectly honest, the biggest fear people in control have is that the people of Sarasota County will put a moratorium on growth, because there have been a couple of attempts to do that over the years, and that's part of limiting the charter. It's part of limiting access on a local level with amendments like that. And it's part of what we see on a state level, where the state is trying to step in and take away home rule.
Mm-hmm.
And they're chipping away at it in the smallest possible ways. And it's upsetting to me that I haven't seen a single county commissioner that we have step up and say, no, you're not taking our home rule.
Yeah.
Because that is the most precious gift that we have as the people of Sarasota County. We have the right of self-governance in our county. So counties that are not chartered, whatever they do in Tallahassee, they have to do in their county.
Right.
When I do this one of my presentations on the charter, I put up a slide from the very first charter that was written in 1973. And I'll paraphrase it, but it basically says this. It says, anything that happens in Tallahassee does not apply to Sarasota County unless it meets these three criteria.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I show that to people to get them to understand there's power in this charter. If you look around and you see a government that doesn't serve you, that's not in the best interest of our community or our future, you have the power to change that.
Yeah.
And it's really important. And so that I was really dedicated to going around this county. I spoke in just about every Republican club. I spoke in a number of community organizations. And a number of people who are on the Charter Review Board, people who got elected in 2022, they were inspired to run for the Charter Review Board because they attended one of my presentations.
And that's a great way to get good people to run is when they feel inspired by, you know, learning about something
that
you shared.
Yeah, and so that's really exciting. And so this last year, you know, because in the beginning, I'm the lone person out, you know. I'm the one yes vote to a sea of no's, you know. Or
you
the
mean
one
on the board?
On the board, or the one no to a sea of yeses. But because we have had people from our community who really care about what the charter represents come and be elected to the board, we've had a number of split votes where it's 4-4.
So it's shifting.
It's shifting. And so that's really important. And if people would really take the time, read the charter. Like when I do the presentation, I go, okay, how many people have read the charter? I say that in the beginning. How many people are going to read the charter now?
Yeah.
You know, read the charter. If you want to understand your government, you have to understand the documents by which your government is supposed to operate, and you need to understand the processes by which that's supposed to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So getting to this Tallahassee changing, kind of grabbing local control, one of the things that's happened in Tallahassee is that they have wiped out campaign finance, local campaign finance rules. And we have a charter, obviously. It says that the limit is $200. In the city of Sarasota, the limit's $200 and you have to be an actual human being. You can't get this bundling of contributions by LLCs in the city. That's gone now. And now these local elections we're seeing are so much more money now because the state limit of $1,000 per donation applies. And of course, it can be from corporations. So I've looked at some of the bundling that's gone on in elections. Your opponent, lots of bundling by, you know, the Neil affiliates, Carlos Baruff affiliates, Randy Benderson affiliates, Lakewood Ranch, Rex Jensen. I mean, those are the major four. There's other people too, but they're very consistent presence in certain campaigns. Do you want to talk a little bit about, because, you know, by any, I mean, I would call you the underdog if you're looking at the finances, right? But also, your opponent is not showing up to any candidate forums. She's not responding. She didn't respond to me. She's not responding to the League of Women Voters. Didn't hear back from Teresa Mast. Tiger Bay, the North County Tiger Bay Club. She did say she would show up, but then she sent a notice of cancellation to them on July 13th. That's on August 1st, next Thursday, August 1st, candidate forum. So could you just comment on, have you ever had the opportunity in any, I don't know, neighborhood association maybe, or have you ever had the opportunity to be in a forum with your opponent?
No, quite honestly, she hasn't shown up for anything. There's been a number of communities that have invited her, and she just doesn't show up. But you know better than most people that this is just a dark money strategy. I mean, this is what they do. They have a candidate. The candidate doesn't show for most things. They usually show for Tiger Bay.
Yeah, see,
the Tiger Bay
worse.
Thing
this
really throws me. I don't understand that. And I am surprised by the League of Women Voters because, you know, they've always shown to be very unbiased and, you know, and the idea that they take the time to present these forums is really critical to the process of electing people. There needs to be even more opportunities for people to be able to meet the candidates and make an informed decision. So I'm really surprised by the Tiger Bay, by her not showing up at Tiger Bay.
But, yeah.
And for, have some kind of strategy. And, you know, the strategy is, you know, negative mailers. You know, you just sit and you wait to see, you know, my goodness, you know, what's the next lie?
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. So I was going to ask you about, you know, what is happening with the spending that you're seeing. Have you seen any negative mailers coming out against you?
Yeah, there's negative mailers. There's negative, you know, text blasts that they send out to people.
Mm-hmm.
There's an underground of people spreading rumors in their network. You know, it's kind of insidious, but, you know, this is what keeps away good candidates. You know, people don't want to get involved with all the nastiness.
And,
you know, I mean, I just sit here and I wait. I've got 3 weeks, you know. I know they're sitting on something, and it doesn't even have to be true. The stuff that they've already come out with isn't true. You know, it's a manipulation of the voter. And then, you know, you think about this not showing up for things. If you deprive the voter of real information, then it's easy to manipulate them with misinformation. And I think we see this time and time again. It's just a really different and interesting perspective when the person on the receiving end of that is yourself.
Definitely got to be an experience, right?
Somebody will send me something and I'll read it and I'll be like, oh my God, that's the craziest thing I've ever read.
But they're talking about me, right?
But it's extreme, you know? That's part of the shock factor of how they are able to win and manipulate elections. The fake voter guide. There's so many things that surprise me.
So hang on, because I want to, so let's talk about that. You know, but last night I was giving a talk. I've updated an ebook that I've written about local dark money. And I have to say, because I ran in 2010 as an NPA for county commission. And, you know, I've lived in a lot of communities across the country. And I never, you know, I thought it's a county commission race, or, you know, there's a school board race. This is a more, you know, there's a phrase like potholes aren't partisan. This is a friendlier level of politics, right? There's not mudslinging in a county. That was what I was very naive. I didn't realize. So last night I was sharing information, and I want to shout out to Mark Warner from WSLR. He videotaped it and I believe streamed it live, and it may still be available on the website. I know someone else has videotaped it too, so you should be able to see it on social media. If not right now, I'll put it out there so you can watch it. But one of the things I discussed was you've got two PACs, Friends of Teresa Mast, your opponent, and she is chairing that committee. And I did go into just the ethics of a candidate who is constrained by campaign finance rules, even though now it's $1,000, it's five times more than it used to be, which should be plenty of money. But we've never seen locally candidates chairing their own PACs until Bridget Ziegler. So she's got, Teresa Mast is chairing her own PAC, and that PAC is about $100,000. She's given $80,000 from her PAC to another PAC. They're both run by Eric Robinson, called Make America Great Again, right? And then Friends of Neil Rainford. Now, Rainford's not chairing his PAC, but Eric Robinson is, and Eric Robinson is his treasurer. So, okay, the candidate's not chairing his PAC, but his campaign treasurer is. And Friends of Neil Rainford has given $40,000 to Make America Great Again. So now to get to this voter guide you're talking about, there's a voter guide that was sent out as a mailer from Make America Great Again political committee, but it's got some insignias and seals of the Florida Republican Party, and it's got a whole list of candidates that they're recommending. So it suggests that this is, you know, kind of associated with the Trump campaign, and it's associated with the Republican Party, and it's not. I mean, they just put together a voter guide. How did you find out about that? I mean, somebody brought it to my attention, but what is the feedback like among Republicans seeing this voter guide that is funded, you know, $120,000 went from the PACs of these two candidates, Mast and Rainford, to Make America Great Again, and they are benefiting from this quote-unquote voter guide that's nothing more than a campaign mailer. What has the response been? Are people believing this? Do they know that it's fake? What's going on?
Well, unfortunately, I think a lot of people thought it was real because they coordinated the delivery of those fake voter guides to arrive in mailboxes the exact day that vote-by-mail ballots arrived. So I think that would be interesting if there was a way, you know, election transparency, if there was a way to access voter guides that were, or vote-by-mail ballots that were turned in early. Is there a disproportionate amount of influence from these voter guides? But there's really no way to do that. I mean, the sad thing about all this is it's legal. It might not be right, but it's legal. And, you know, also, is the accountability? Where's the accountability factor?
Yeah. See, the thing is, I think we're in a time right now where, and I've shared a lot of information about the behavior of these political committees, and you've got entities that don't exist that are donating to political committees. You've got a corporation being conflated with a political committee as if they're the same. In a deliberate attempt, I believe it's deliberate, my opinion, but it certainly is confusing, whether it's deliberate or not. That confusion serves to conceal donors. So we're in this time where if there's any ambiguity, it's almost like you have to anticipate every crazy, corrupt, cockamamie thing that people are going to do and put a rule against it. We can't just count on common sense and fair play. So, but be that as it may, those insignias, there's a gentleman from Lake Mary, Anthony Sabatini, who I've seen his posting calling out the political consultant for Teresa Mast and Neil Rainford. They're both using or hiring Anthony Petticini. Is his company is doing mailers for them. And also he named Eric Robinson and Anthony Petticini, saying, you know, you took our logo, you took our branding, and you stole it, and you put this mailer out, and we are going to come after you legally. Now, whether or not he does that, you know, I don't know. But I don't know that it's always legal what they're doing, you know? The question is, who's going to actually challenge it, and who's going to enforce the rules? And what I can tell you from the research I've done is the Department of State, when it comes to these PACs, I don't see them. I don't see a lot of enforcement of standards. I just don't.
No, you might be right about the Lake County thing, because I know Anthony Sabatini. He is also a member of the Republican Liberty Caucus, you know, and he is also an attorney. So they may have stepped over the line in that situation with him. But yeah, that same voter guide showed up in a number of counties.
Really?
Oh yeah, in a number of counties. Same exact voter guide, but with, like, ours has the Sarasota Republican Party, and then theirs had Lake County. I think one showed up in Manatee, and there were a couple other counties. The same exact voter guide showed up.
Okay, well, everyone, you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1, LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2023-24 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. My guest today is Alex Coe. She's running for County Commission, District 1, in the upcoming primary, the upcoming Republican primary. And I want to get back to this fake voter guide issue, because, of course, Make America Great Again is invoking the former President Trump, right? And it's his slogan. And the groups in Sarasota County, it's my understanding that I found the voter guide so interesting because it says that the endorsement is going to Mast and to Rainford, but haven't those groups actually endorsed you and Tom Knight? Is that, or maybe they haven't endorsed?
Well, yeah, if you're talking about the America First, we have an America First caucus.
Okay.
Right? Okay, so within the Republican Club, you have the Republican Party of Sarasota County. Then underneath the Republican Party of Sarasota County, there are clubs, all of these Republican clubs that you can join in your neighborhood. They have lunch and dinner events. You can come. You can see speakers. Mm-hmm. There are all of these clubs. Mm-hmm. Then there are caucuses. Mm-hmm. The Republican Liberty Caucus was the first caucus to come into Sarasota. I brought that caucus here in 2016. Mm-hmm. Our motto is "Make Republicans Republican Again." We were the first caucus to come in.
Okay.
There are now two other caucuses that have come into Sarasota County. One is the America First Caucus, and the other is the Republican Assembly, which is also a caucus.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between a caucus and a club is caucuses do the work. Like I mentioned earlier.
They create a platform, right?
Well, we do have a platform, actually.
Okay.
We have a platform of what we represent, less government, more freedom, you know, things, the core principles of conservative ideology. And so we do the work, like I mentioned, about working on repealing 7.1A, this amendment that says the charter cannot conflict with the charter.
But I want to get back to this notion of there's a MAGA logo or MAGA line on this voter guide, but it's my understanding that if you're looking for groups that are more aligned with Trump supporters, isn't it true that they've actually endorsed you and
Knight? That's what I was saying. So these caucuses, the America First Caucus and the Sarasota Assembly, they held extensive interviews of every candidate, everybody that was running, and then their board, their interview committee, recommended the candidates to the board, and then the board actually presented those candidates to the entire membership of each organization, and each organization has more than 150 members, and the members voted to approve those candidates. So their voter guide is a vetted voter guide of people that their organizations have deemed are best for the future of Sarasota County.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a vetted voter guide.
So,
and they endorse me. America First Caucus has endorsed me. Mm-hmm. The Republican Assembly has endorsed me.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Republican Liberty Caucus has endorsed me as well.
Okay. And so let's say there's just a spectrum of Republican opinion in those caucuses. They've all come down and made the determination that you're the person they're endorsing.
Correct. And you can go to their website and they'll tell you why.
And tell me, and is Tom Knight also, did they endorse him? Maybe you don't remember.
Yes, okay. They did endorse
So
Tom
it's
Knight
funny
too.
Because, like, here's this guide, and it's choosing these other folks. And then there's also, I think, you know, one of the things that tipped me off, like, this is totally fake, is the hospital board folks are the moderates, like, not the medical freedom people. So whoever is creating this voter guide, it's so obviously fake. Because if you're going to put MAGA on a voter guide and then you've got the medical, you know, the moderates.
Not the medical.
Yeah, exactly.
People, right?
I mean, it's like, well, that's not actually. I just thought it was so bizarre.
That's politics.
Yeah, you right. Know, and we're seeing.
It's meant to be confusing because.
Yeah, but you know something, Alex? I got to say, I've never seen a fake voter guide.
Yeah,
I've been
never
watching. You and I have been watching this for well over a decade. And no, this is. They're up in the ante every time you turn around.
It's really shocking. Now, about this, you know, when the America First endorsement came out, Teresa's campaign was upset, and Tracy Williams, her volunteer coordinator and
whose
campaign
daughter,
manager
whose
and
daughter
who
is
filed
the
her daughter
candidate, yeah,
as the write-in candidate
to close the primary,
disenfranchised over 20,000 mm-hmm. people in the district that she says she wants to represent. I don't understand that either. They came out with a social media post saying Teresa Mast is the only America First candidate, and it's just all of this kind of desperation that we see. But a failure to really come face to face. Like, I'm like, Teresa, let's go in the middle of the community. You sit in a chair, I sit in a chair. Let the community ask us questions. Let's talk to them about how we would handle things. But, you know, no, the people are not only, this is how extreme, right? Not only were an entire group of voters deprived their right to vote by the shenanigans of her campaign manager filing her daughter as a fake
20-year-old
candidate.
Daughter, Hope.
Yeah, to do that.
Which is, I'm like, can I just say, I always say, if you're going to do that, would you pick someone who's, like, not your kid? That's happened twice.
Yeah.
Victoria Brill, who is a lovely person, I've met her. Why would parents permit, and why would you do that to your kid? It's just so ridiculous.
Well, you know,
get a real adult, 50-something, you know? Like, really? This is just pathetic.
But this goes back to what you said earlier about we really should sit down and look at everything that they do, everything that's done to manipulate voting. There's actually a section in the Division of Elections oversees two statutes, Statute 104 and Statute 106, which have to do with election law. There's a section in 104 that says corruptly influencing voting. And the first part of that, I think a lot of these things that they're doing could fall under that. But it goes back to the enforcement or the consequences. But I do think your point is well taken. And this is something we could really do on the charter. We could sit there and say, these are the 10 things they do. We're going to put something in the charter under elections, under 6.2. That's the section of our charter that deals with the election process. Mm-hmm. And we could take out dark money. We could limit how much you can have.
We could
do things.
Let me ask you, though, with how Tallahassee has specifically exerted, they've exerted power to kind of kneecap county charters.
You need a county commissioner who's going to stand up to the state.
Okay.
And who's going to claim our home rule. Mm-hmm. Because that's the most important thing we have. If we are willing as individuals to give up our right to self-governance, I think most people would say no. So are we willing as a community to give up our right to self-governance?
Yeah.
We should say no. And we need to elect leaders who are going to stand up and defend our right to self-governance and home rule.
Yeah, which we do have here. Let's shift gears a little bit. You know, last summer, not that long ago, well, no, it was recently, we were actually traveling, but heard about the flooding in Florida. that occurred in Broward County. Now, Broward is really built out. And I know you came, one of the avenues to your interest in county government was your own experience with your own property, which had been fine when you first built, but then things changed, didn't it? What was your experience with stormwater infrastructure and flooding?
Well, to condense a 8-year nightmare, really, there's no other way to describe it. I bought a 5-acre farm in 1999. It was on the edge of town. Now it's in the middle of town. A big project went up to the east of me, and then shortly thereafter, a roadway was widened, and Sarasota County bought the property next to me. Basically, my property's been flooded first by a 30-foot river, then a 50-foot river, then a 70-foot river, and then they just turned the whole place into a pond. So I have unfortunately learned more about stormwater and drainage and floodplains and flood zones than I ever thought I wanted to learn. But the most important thing that I learned that I will carry to the county commission seat is that we really need to take a comprehensive look at flooding. And there is actually a study that I've started reading that the county does have on file that they did after Hurricane Ian. So hopefully that is already on its way. But for way too long, stormwater, the ditches, have any maintenance of those ditches has only been driven by complaint. And so there's a number of areas that need to be addressed. And then now the new FEMA flood maps came out. And we've put almost 6,000 homes in a floodplain. And my home included, I wasn't in a floodplain before, and now I'm full in a floodplain. And there's a lot of, you know, most people are not looking at the flood maps unless they got a notice that said, hey, guess what? You have to have flood insurance now.
Yeah.
But it's something very serious. And this goes back to, you know, my belief that constitutional government should exist everywhere.
Yeah.
And local government tends to be the biggest violator of our constitutional rights. And so with constitutional government established, you have the core principles of government, which is safety, health, well-being, and property rights. And so for Sarasota County and for our biggest threat, which is weather and hurricanes, the number one focus of this county government should be resilience. We have a lot of money under a program called Resilient SRQ. Over $500 million we have.
Is that the infrastructure money from Washington, from the Biden administration?
Half of it's HUD money.
Okay.
And the other half is designated for mitigation. It's supposed to be used specifically
for... But this is the Biden infrastructure money. It's from D.C.
It's part of FEMA hurricane, you know, funding. So we really need to look at that. That would be one of the first things I would look at. And we're still having issues with hurricane shelters. I mean, I'm still hearing people in South County, and even up here, we don't have proper hurricane shelters. We have learned over the past that evacuating is not a solution. So we really need to have defined processes and methodologies for people to be able to stay in place.
I'm going to stop you. When you say evacuating is not a solution, you're not suggesting that people who are told to evacuate their home not leave their home. I think you're talking about getting on I-75 and heading north is not. Am I right?
Getting out of, if you have to evacuate to get out of danger, right? Barrier islands, things like that. You know, I mean, I have,
of course, you do that.
Like, I have a fortress of a house. So I always tell all my friends, if you're in an evacuation zone, just come hang out with me. But there's no place for people to go. I mean, people try, I'm going to get on a plane, I'm going to fly here. People try to get out, but a lot of people don't have that option. And so for those people that don't have that option, we need to have safe, facilities for people to ride out the storm.
On high ground here.
On high ground here. We need to have some kind of system. And we still don't have that in play. I had heard from somebody in Venice about, I guess it was the mayor at the time, had allowed people in a government building during Ian. And I guess they told me there was some kind of repercussions for whoever was the mayor then for doing that, for letting people in a government building. But
I mean, what are you
going to
do? You've got
to do something, right? Yeah. I mean, that's what the government exists for. They exist to deliver services to us, to provide for our quality of life. And their duty is to the health, safety, welfare, and property rights of the people. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are not happy about that. I mean, the biggest issue in this campaign is overdevelopment. In my district, just about every neighborhood is looking at some major overdevelopment project in their community that they fear is going to impact their health, well-being, and the property rights they have.
So I want to ask you, because one of the frequent refrains that I would say, you know, developers who are prolific donors who, you know, create these communities, and what they'll say is, well, you know, the Burt Harris Act is there to ensure that once a property right is given to a property owner, it can't be taken away. And what they'll say, and there's a recent op-ed by a former county commissioner that was sent to me. I have to read this, but the gist of it, someone explained to me, was, well, there's nothing you can do because you have to say yes, because if these, you know, if the building codes allow for something to be built, then it always, you always have to say yes. But my experience is, yeah, but there's always more. It's not just about one thing. Flooding is an issue. You know, Betsy Benack was on here on my show, and she was saying, you know, in Manatee County, they're looking now at the potential for having to go with private water supplies to accommodate, you know, building density that's been approved. There's traffic issues. There's other infrastructure issues. I don't buy that you have to rubber stamp. You know, there's this perception that's being created that everything just needs to be rubber stamped. And I'm like, well, why are they there asking for a variance? Why are they there asking for permission if the county has to say yes for everything? It just seems to me that when you're getting to this point where you could have real serious flooding, you can require things of a development or a developer. You can require, if you're looking at dwindling water supplies, isn't it true that there are constraints even with these property rights and Burt Harris?
Well, you know, there should be, but, you know, there's other factors that push this. You know, one is that we continue to elect people from the development sector to office. And when you have a board of people that are all in development, they're making decisions to promote development because that's what they know. And in defense of them, they think, well, we're making money. Everybody else is making money. We must be building an economy for Sarasota. So, you know, that's one of the issues. And then the other issue, I think, is just straight up greed. If you have a piece of property that you bought, right? Property comes with the rights you bought it with. And that property has the rights that you can build 40 houses. If you can build 400 houses, you can make millions. Mm-hmm. If you can build 4,000 houses, you can make billions. So this push to maximize the buildability of land, you know, I think that this is all stemmed out of years ago when they came up with this highest and best use, this ideology of government to like maximize the tax
Well, that's
of
in real
every
estate.
Single piece yeah. of land. And, you know, the Burt Harris Act, you buy the property with the property rights it came to with. You know, I've had these discussions with some of these attorneys, and I'm like, you don't just get the overlay. You don't just get these things.
Which is an overlay district is an alternative, but it's in my experience, it's the devil's in the details kind of thing. And the reality is there are many decisions that have to be arrived at along the way. And there are people who fund campaigns who have good representatives for their interests who are in there manipulating or, you know, influencing staff and commissioners so that the details all go their way. And we wind up with whatever problems have to be fixed or with the costs of the infrastructure to accommodate their, you know, their maximized return. It's not a simple subject.
No, it's not a simple subject, but the core, the missing element in all of this is planning. Mm-hmm. And that is really what our 2050 comprehensive plan was about. It was about planning for the future. And most of the planning has just been thrown out. And that's why we see the things we have now, houses without any roads. And we see the infrastructure that's lacking. And that would have been addressed with proper planning.
Mm. Alex, where can people go to find out more about your campaign?
Well, you can go to our website at letsgowithco.com. And I'm available to anyone. You can email me. My email is srqalexandraco@gmail.com. And I'm 100% available to people. You have any questions, you get some nasty flyer, nasty mailer, you want to talk to me about it, you know, just send me a message. It's the final week, so anything can happen. We got to, you know, be vigilant and think about the future.
Yeah, it's about 3.5 weeks now till Election Day. Well, everybody, you have been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1, LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. My ebook is free. It's called Local Dark Money, Citizens United Meets Main Street. And you can find it on my Substack. If you just go to Substack and look for Kathy Antunes, Kathy with a C, A-N-T-U-N-E-S, you can find my blog, and the Local Dark Money entry will take you to that ebook. It's really just about how PAC money has been infiltrating local elections and, you know, who's funding these PACs. It's kind of just a follow the money trail expose on what's been going on in Sarasota and Manatee County. Thank you all so much for listening. Be sure to stay tuned now for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day.
host of Democracy Now! You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Today, as Israel fights on the front line of civilization, I too appeal to America. Give us the tools faster, and we'll finish the job faster.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addresses a joint session of Congress as thousands protest outside in Washington, D.C., calling for a ceasefire, a hostage deal, and Netanyahu's arrest for committing war crimes in Gaza. More than 100 lawmakers skipped the speech, as did Vice President Kamala Harris. We'll talk to Palestinian-American legal scholar Noura Etikat and Phyllis Bennis of the Institute for Policy Studies. Then we speak with two peace activists, one Israeli, one Palestinian, who are working together to end the war in Gaza and build a lasting peace.
I'm a peace activist. I lost my parents, and I believe that peace is possible. I know that peace is possible, and this is what me and my partners, Palestinian Israeli partners, are working on now, day and night, to bring peace to this land.
Maoz Inon's parents were killed on October 7th. Aziz Abu Sada's 19-year-old brother died after being tortured in an Israeli prison. All that and more coming up.